mind is to talk about two reciprocal phases in a spiritual life, in Buddhist spiritual life, that go together and support each other and complement each other, challenge each other and test each other. And they could be called simply a phase of disengagement and a phase of engagement. And that there's a cycle and a practice of disengaging and engaging, disengaging and engaging, of cycles of withdrawal and cycles of return, withdrawal and return. And, you know, it's as fundamental as breathing is, you know, expansion and contraction, taking in and taking out, giving and receiving. And it's very important to understand this, that disengagement and engagement go together, and not to give priority to one over the other, which some people do. Some people make almost a religion of just doing one half of it. Some people are really into the disengagement part. Some people really into the engagement part. They're both equally important and support each other. But I express it as disengagement and engagement as opposed to engagement, disengagement. Because I think the beginning of Buddhist practice really begins with a kind of effort to disengage from something. And the question is what that is. Disengage and then to re-engage in a more useful, wiser way. Disengagement has, for some people in the West, a negative connotation, because in the West, a lot of us like to be engaged, and we put a lot of value on being engaged in the world and being involved in all kinds of ways. And to disengage or withdraw is almost antithetical with the way some people live their lives or want to live their lives. And so the process, the phases of disengagement and engagement can happen at the micro level of a moment, and they can happen in big scales. And some people would argue that a Buddhist monastic is someone who has chosen to do it in the big scale, to withdraw in some way, withdraw permanently from some aspects of life, at least in this lifetime. And then maybe in a later lifetime, maybe they do something different kind of process. But it can also be big terms for lay people in terms of, even for monastics, where they'll withdraw from their normal activities to be on retreat for some time. And sometimes the retreats can be quite long. People might withdraw from their activities, normal activities of life, for years, sometimes on retreat, sometimes for months, sometimes for weeks, sometimes days. And part of the value of doing that, any kind of withdrawal, stepping off, is to see clearly what's really true in our life, what's really going on in our life. The kind of similar to the idea of engagement, disengagement, is that the Chinese words, when the Chinese translated Sanskrit Buddhism into Chinese, the words for concentration and mindfulness, they translated into the characters I think it's Chögyam, which is stop and see. To stop and see. It's very kind of immediate and kind of much more, makes more sense in a sense than, you know, concentration and mindfulness. What is that? But stop and see. The Chinese tend to be very practical. And the concentration practice is a practice of stopping, and mindfulness is a practice of seeing. So we disengage, partly so we can see more clearly what is going on, what's really happening. Often when we're not disengaged, we don't see really what's going on very well. We're so lost and consumed with what's going on, so preoccupied with what's happening, we have sometimes a hard time seeing what's happening. And it can be very simple and straightforward. I saw it in my own sitting here, sitting with you now. When I first sat down, I noticed levels of agitation in my body, in my mind, which were not abnormal. It wasn't like a, you know, abnormal level of agitation. It had something to do with just driving down here, down the hill and in the rain. But I could feel it in my body, and by sitting and stopping, disengaging from continued activity, I was able to see that level of agitation very clearly, and in seeing it, allow it to kind of unwind. If I had not stopped to sit, but rather continued in a day and driving around, doing errands and all that, I probably wouldn't have noticed at all that level of subtle agitation. The stopping allowed me to see it. And once I allow it to see it and stop, it allows it to process that stuff. And a lot of Buddhist practice has to do with processing, allowing the processing of this kind of what's called the accumulation. There's a wonderful technical word called the accumulation. What you accumulate in the course of your life, in the course of your day, by all the ways in which you respond and react and to life around you, the ways in which you kind of barrel ahead, perhaps. So if you spend a day being filled with desire, that accumulates a certain momentum of desire in the psyche, in the body, and that can build over time. If you spend a day being afraid, that builds up a certain kind of tension in your body. And part of the function of disengaging is to allow us to see this very clearly, and then also to let it unwind, to let it kind of settle ourselves. So this is sometimes called a purification process, because we're purifying ourselves of some of this accumulation that's built up. As the accumulation settles down, then we have a greater ability to see clearly. So I saw that myself. I sat down here and I was a little bit agitated because of the drive down, whatever reason. And what I found was that being a little bit agitated, it was a lot easier for my mind to kind of drift off. But as I stayed present for my agitation and learned to disengage from it and it kind of processed itself out, then the tendency to want to slip away into distraction lessened for me more and more. Until the very end of the sitting. I was aware that the end was coming a few minutes before the bell. And it occurred to me that I had to give a talk. And so I started wondering what I was going to talk about. And I got swept up, lost, in thinking about what I was going to talk about. And it wasn't until I heard the bells, that I woke up in a sense. Oh, I'm planning a talk. That's what's going on. I spent 2 or 3 or 4 minutes, I don't know, some minutes here, kind of swept up, lost in that process again. I had gotten engaged without awareness of being engaged. And it was the bell that helped me to disengage so I can see clearly what was going on. It's all too easy for us to get caught up and swept up and get engaged in life and not be mindful of what's happening as we do it. And then our normal responses, kind of sometimes our neurotic responses, sometimes our all kinds of stressful ways of responding, get the upper hand. And it's very valuable then to find some way to disengage, to see clearly what's going on. So in the bigger picture, it can involve going on retreats. The advantage of going on retreats is that it's very difficult to engage in a very thorough way. And, you know, sitting for half an hour in meditation, you can disengage with perhaps, you know, the tensions build up from the drive here or, you know, something. But the accumulated tensions of the last month or the last year don't really show themselves even in a simple half an hour sitting. Sometimes it takes a longer sitting, a longer quieting and settling to start seeing the undercurrents of concerns and fears and preoccupations that are building up the accumulated stuff in our body and mind, our psyche. And sometimes a longer retreat allows kind of us to see deeper and deeper and deeper currents that maybe you didn't even realize you had, because very few people in our society take the time to disengage for a long time, to long enough to really see very, very clearly. But the disengagement can be as simple as doing a half an hour or an hour, 45-minute sit every day. It's very powerful to do that. And as I said, many people will continue the momentum of their lives without much reflection or mindfulness and without taking the opportunity to disengage. Now, to go back to myself, you know, to use myself as an example, I like to sit a lot. It hasn't always been easy for me to sit. There was often struggles to learn how to sit and to calm the mind and the body. And especially in the early years of the practice, there was a lot of struggles with all the accumulation and all the stress and tension and the monkey mind. And just to learn to be sit still was a great challenge for me. With time, I began to enjoy the meditation more and more. And basically, I enjoy sitting a lot. I feel it's very important for me personally to continue with the practice. I put a lot of value on it. I feel that partly being a meditation teacher, I should also sit regularly just to, you know, to sit my talk. So there's a lot of reasons to meditate for me. And still I can find sometimes that I'm engaged in activities, and it just, I kind of like, there's this momentum kind of current carrying me along, and I can find sometimes a little argument in my mind saying, well, maybe I won't sit right now. Maybe I'll continue doing what I'm doing right now. Maybe cleaning our apartment is more important, you know, or maybe, you know, finishing this email, or there's, you know, all these things that, you know, life is filled of activities. And I can feel inside myself a little debate going on about, oh, and the debate exists because of the momentum, the current of accumulated kind of being carried and swept along with what I'm already doing. And inevitably, every time I do stop, I'm so glad I did. But the lawyers, you know, are negotiating before I sit sometimes. You know, maybe not right now, maybe it's more important what I'm doing now, and whatever. So maybe some of you have the same process inside of you. If you're wondering, you know. But it's inevitably, once I sit down, I'm so glad I did. Once I disengaged, started the process of disengagement, it's a process of disengagement. So I disengage from activity at least. And it's very, very helpful to disengage at least from activity. So that's one of the things we do when we sit down to meditate, or we do walking meditation in a sense. We disengage from the normal activities. And then we can see what's been accumulated. And we allow what's been accumulated to begin to unwind and relax. And then it gets more subtle, you know, more in the moment, you know, the disengagement. With the mind, for example, with the thoughts. So I spent these minutes, the last minutes of the sitting, you know, thinking about the talk I was going to give. And I didn't have the wherewithal, the mindfulness there until the bell rang to disengage from the mind's preoccupation with the talk. And sometimes I find that it's longer than just a few minutes. You know, sometimes I find myself, especially if I'm not meditating, I can be swept up in thoughts and concerns for a long time until something kind of wakes me up from it. How do we wake from the daytime dream? This is one of the great little sayings in Buddhism. It's one thing to awake from nighttime dreams, but how many of us know how to wake from the daytime dreams? So to disengage is to disengage from our illusions and dreams we've been caught up and lost in. And so part of the training in meditation, I feel, is to learn how to disengage ourselves from the thought streams that we get caught up in. And to learn that it's valuable to do that, and to begin developing the skills to disengage from the thought streams. That doesn't mean that we have to stop thinking or we have a negative opinion about our thoughts, but it means that we have the ability to step off out of them so we're not lost in them or caught in them or led around by the nose by them. They, you know, the thoughts grab us by the nose and off we go, being pulled by them. And so a very important part of the meditation process is to begin looking at how we engage in our thought, how we participate in our thinking, to notice our thinking process, and notice how we're interested in, how we believe in it, how we get caught by it, how we get swept away by them, or what is our relationship to our thoughts and our thinking, to study that, and to find out some way to step out of it, or to disengage from it, or to stop it. So sometimes it can be as powerful as simply, I'm not going to think that anymore. And that can work sometimes. And sometimes it's a matter of simply seeing very clearly that this is what the thought pattern is. And then in that clarity, have kind of step into a bigger mind than the narrow claustrophobic mind of thinking. It's kind of like if you go into a really, really big room, you feel so spacious that you're very forgiving and accepting of everything that's in the room. But if you're in a very tight little space, it feels claustrophobic and you're not very accepting of, you know, what's happening. When the mind disengages from the narrow thought streams, then there's opportunity there to enter into a kind of more spacious mind, a more open, cathedral-like mind, perhaps, or still mind, that then it can be much more accepting of what's happening. And so part of the process of disengagement is to help us also become much more accepting and spacious about what's actually happening in our lives, so that we get to start developing a healthier relationship to what's happening. So it's not just simply disengagement for the sake of disengagement. It's for disengagement for the sake of having a wiser relationship to what is actually here. So acceptance often is a very wise way of being. Wise acceptance, at least, is. Not to be in constant conflict with what's going on. So the momentary disengagements, you know, in the moment, that can be done outside of meditation. I do it when I drive, for example. I mean, I try to do it all the time in some way or other, to notice what's happening with my life and my thoughts, and then seeing, you know, trying to be awake. Another word for being disengaged is to be awake to what's happening. To be awake is not to be lost in engagement. So I try to be awake. And sometimes it's maybe as simple as I come to a red light. And maybe at least there I'll try to notice what I'm doing, what's going on. Because sometimes I get lost in my thoughts. But I try to find times during the day where I'll wake up. And it's possible for me to think, if I want to think, and be awake to that process. But then when I'm awake to that process, it qualitatively can feel very different than when I'm lost in my thoughts or preoccupied by them. If I'm awake to my thinking process, there's a lot more choice about how I think and what I follow through on. And it's very much more satisfying for me to be awake while I think than to be asleep while I think. So to disengage, whether it's in the moment, a good interesting place to do it is in conversation. You should try that in conversation sometime. What it might mean in conversation is that you want to interrupt, or you're so adamant you really want to say your piece, and you disengage from what you feel you need to say for half a second, or a second, or 2 seconds, or 5 seconds, and to allow there to be a little gap between stimulus and response. Part of the function of disengagement is to allow there to be a gap between the stimulus of the world and your response. Because when there's not a gap, when we respond automatically, there's often not much wisdom. So let there be a gap, and then see if there's another way you want to respond. So it can be very small, the disengagement in the moment, any time during the course of the day. It can be bigger moments, movements of disengagement, of sitting on retreat, sitting in meditation for a short time. It can be going on retreat. There's all kinds of ways that we do this. Going for a hike can function that way. And then there's the other half of the movement, which is the engagement movement, which is then coming back into life in a wise way. Going on long retreats, the process of re-engagement is a very important one, and it's a time of actually of tremendous learning and insight is to watch how we reappropriate, or that's the right word, maybe reconstitute, reconstruct ourself, our self-image, our reality in the world around us. Some people don't take advantage of the transition out of a retreat or out of meditation, and we just kind of jump back into normal life very quickly. But there's a very, very significant time as you leave a retreat, leave even a half an hour meditation session, to notice how we reconstruct so much of our life. If we don't pay attention, we reconstruct it mindlessly. It happens for us. If we do it slowly or mindfully, there's an opportunity to reconstruct in a wise way, or to engage in a wise way. So how do we engage then? How do we get involved in activity? How do we act after a period of disengagement? Classically in Buddhism, There's no word, there's no real word, perhaps, for meditation in the ancient Buddhist vocabulary. The word that's used, that's sometimes translated as meditation, is bhavana, which literally means cultivation or development. And spiritual life was understood to be a process of cultivation and development of certain qualities within us, qualities of faith, of concentration, of calm, of joy, of compassion, of inner strength. So in a classic Buddhist sense, we disengage, and then the engagement part is being interested in nurturing certain inner qualities, psychic qualities inside of us, to nurture and develop that which is wholesome, and to remain disengaged from that which is unwholesome. So we disengage to see what's going on for us. So again, with myself, I notice that when I sit down, when I sit and pay attention, I'll notice sometimes unwholesome streams within me. Maybe I'm filled with desire for something, or anger towards something, or aversion or something. Other times I notice there's streams of wholesome qualities. I feel some joy, I feel calmness, I feel delight or gratitude. The engagement part, once you see these things, the engagement part is to try to decide how you're going to relate to these different forces within us. And for me, when I see the unwholesome ones, I try the best I can to stay disengaged. If it's very simple to disengage from them, let go of them, I'll do so. If it's not, if they have a kind of little grip on me, then I might decide to actually bring careful mindfulness to that process, to explore it and get to know it well, to feel it in my body and various things. If it's a wholesome mental state that I notice, then I'll try to nourish it, nurture it, try to support it or prompt it, very gently. I mean, not with expectation or demand or desire or greed. But, for example, if I see it happen again, I hope it's okay to make all these personal examples. There's a style of Buddhist Dharma teaching where the teacher never talks about him or herself. But that's not the American way. So after I sat here for a while with you, I felt joy sitting here. It was very, very mild kind of joy. But I noticed it. And it was part of the field of what mindfulness picked up on. And it felt like a very wholesome thing, appropriate thing to allow to happen. And so I don't know what the right word is, nudged it along. I kind of appreciated it. The appreciation of wholesome states often will allow them to let them grow or let them shine more clearly. So I appreciated that joy, kind of had a little appreciation of it or nurturing of it. I allowed the joy to encourage the mindfulness. I noticed the joy was there. Great. And then, okay, I'll let it kind of be there, kind of, in a sense. This is the, I don't know if this makes sense to, if you understand what I'm saying, but I kind of let the joy kind of be like a little cheerleader, a little nudger, a little pressure on the mindfulness so that to help me stay present and mindful. So I was trying to cultivate that joy, try to cultivate the mindfulness more, develop it. So part of the engagement process is to take some responsibility for the state, the quality of our mind, and to see what qualities of mind can we let go of and kind of say thank you, but not today. And what qualities of mind can we cultivate and develop and strengthen? There's a lot of risk. There's some risk in doing this, of course, because then we kind of measure ourselves how well we're doing, and we have expectations and judgments about it all, our state of our mind. And hopefully we can do that without that kind of painful tendencies. Engagement also can mean how then we choose to enter into the relationship with the world outside of us. So it's not just simply the relationship with our inner psychic life, but how do we enter into relationship with the world around us? And I find that sometimes I enter into that world with more or less clarity about what goes into it, how I choose to enter into engagement. Sometimes I'll get involved in a relationship in the world around me, and I'm not aware of the values or the prejudices or the biases or whatever that's affecting me in the choices I make, in the relationships I enter into. And sometimes I'll see that, and I'll try to come as wise as I can. Yesterday, I engaged with someone who was doing something when it was going to request that they do it differently. And I thought that I had some... I thought I was clear about where I was coming from, clear about how I was and how I was going to do it. And then I went over to the person to talk to the person. And the way the person talked back to me was like a trigger. And I found it hard for me to stay mindfully disengaged so I can be wisely engaged. I found myself kind of getting a little bit irritated and kind of being pulled into... And it was really a kind of a test for me in my mindfulness. And I don't think I did as well... I didn't do as well as I wanted to have done for various reasons. But for me, it was, but I was trying really hard to stay with the practice, even though it wasn't in my best form. So that I could come into that relationship, talking to that person, from the best places within me that I had available. So how do we engage with the people? How do we engage with in relationship? Is a very important part of Buddhist practice. Do we meet the world with compassion, with acceptance, with generosity? How do we want to live our lives? How do we want to, in a healthy way, to create a community of and a society through the small steps of how we engage in our life? As we engage in the world, it becomes a test for our mindfulness, like it was for me in my conversation yesterday. And it's very important to have it tested, because I found that it's very easy, I don't know if easy, I mean, it wasn't easy for me always, but it's one thing to go and meditate, it's one thing to go and retreat and develop calm and concentration and peace and infinite forgiveness for the whole entire universe and great love for everyone everywhere. And, you know, it's great in this artificial environment. and then feel, you know, wow, I'm really a great spiritual person. But it's really important to have whatever happens to us in meditation, whatever cultivation, development, and calmness and peace and compassion we develop, to have it tested in real life, to really see if it's real, and to see, you know, where are the rough edges and where are the places which is, you know, and still needs to be looked at and addressed. It becomes artificial to always stay in disengagement mode. It's important to get, you know, your spiritual life tested. It's also important to kind of feel that your spiritual life is there for to help your community. That it's not just something you're doing for yourself. So this process of engagement and disengagement. Disengagement, engagement, disengagement, engagement. Looking for opportunities to do that. And whether it's in the moment or in big spans of time. Now, what I'd like to end by saying is that some people are not comfortable with this duality of disengagement and engagement. And I'd like to say there is a way of healing these two or synthesizing them, bringing them together. And this is it's kind of like a secret of practice. And it's a secret partly because it's very hard to understand. So maybe you shouldn't tell people until they've practiced for, you know, 50 years. And then you can kind of slip it in, you know, and say, wow, why didn't you tell me that 50 years ago? Well, you weren't ready 50 years ago. You wouldn't have heard it. You wouldn't have understood. So maybe it's not pointless to tell you. But I'm kind of building up to it so that you really pay attention, really listen. So this is the secret. Sooner or later, you're going to find yourself lost in thought. Right? That's not the secret. That's that we all know. Sooner or later, you're going to find. Sooner or later, probably sooner rather than later, but you're going to find yourself lost in your thoughts and completely lost, you know. Sooner or later, and maybe it's later now, you're going to wake up. But we all wake up sooner or later. If we don't, you'll end up to be institutionalized. Sooner or later, everyone wakes up, because reality is always a nuisance. It's always, always something in the way of your desires, so you wake up. Sooner or later, you wake up. So you're sitting in meditation, for example, and you notice that for the last 5 minutes, you're lost in thought. You notice you're lost, you're thinking and involved in thought. So then, some people will say, well, okay, I got to get back to my breath. Or, oh, shoot. You know, I'm trying to be mindful, and I wasn't mindful, and I'm lost, and I'm a terrible meditator. And there's all these ways in which we react. Or the place to be is back with the breath, or I have to get back to the present moment, and I got to wake up, and just kind of steel ourselves and sit up straight and, you know, pounce back on the breath. And all kinds of wonderful things you can do. The secret is that the moment that you notice that you've been drifting away, the moment that you wake up, the first moment is a moment of mindfulness, is a moment of being awake. The first moment is the very essence of what the Buddha Dharma is pointing towards. And we usually miss it. Because we've woken up. There's a moment of waking up. There's a moment there before you have a judgment or a reaction, an interpretation of what that means. Oh, I've been lost for 5 minutes. I hope the teachers didn't notice. I've been lost for 5 minutes and I'm a spiritual failure. Or I've been lost for 5 minutes, but that was a great fantasy. Let's go back. There's a moment there when none of those interpretations and reactions are happening. That moment is a secret. That moment is what you've been... Some people have been trying... You know, some people don't notice that moment. They think, I'll never get it. I'll never get to the point they're talking about. They've gotten to that point a lot. But they never appreciated it. They never noticed that moment of waking up. And the secret is to begin... noticing when you first drift off from, when you first come back from having drifted off, that first moment or first moment of drifting, of coming back, of waking up, start savoring it or investigating or sensing it or exploring it or appreciating it or celebrating it, just in and of itself. Now, it's very hard to do this for some people because the tendencies to be judgmental or reactive or critical or whatever are so strong that they almost color that moment. But partly it's because we have a tremendous bias towards fixating on our judgments, our desires, our aversions, our fears. We have a bias of fixating on what's happening. So for example, maybe what you wake up to is pain, physical pain. And so we fixate immediately, kind of riveted by the pain. Not noticing that for a moment there was this wakefulness there to the fact of being just being awake again to pain. You were lost in thought, and the pain was your mindfulness bell that brought you back. For a moment, you were awake. If you can appreciate that moment and then nourish it, prompt it, encourage it, rather than jerking the mind back to the breath, allow the breathing to come back into that space. So you don't have to move your mind. You don't have to bring your mind back to something. You don't have to move, you know. What you do is you notice you've woken up. And then see if you can let more things enter into that space of being awake. And then see if you can encourage that and develop it with dedication, with love, devotion. That space. It's a lot more peaceful to practice that way. That moment of waking up and nourishing that, it can be a moment where disengagement and engagement are happening at the same time. Life is happening. At the same time as we're awake to it. We don't have to, at that moment, we don't have to be concerned with either engaging ourselves more or disengaging ourselves more. The two can, in a sense, exist harmoniously as one in that moment, to be awake. So that's the secret. And now you have a lifetime of trying to understand it, what that is, what that means. But you might explore these three things I've talked about today. The value of disengagement, the value of engagement, and the value of appreciating the very simple, innocent, almost invisible, almost nothing state of waking up from being lost. The first moments of that, first half moment. So those are my thoughts for today. See, I was very productive these last 3-4 minutes. and it's lovely to come down here today and sit in the rain. And so thank you all very much.